Please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Mangalam Gurudevaya Devi Matriksha Mangalam Mangalam Bhakta Brindevya Sarva Lokaya Mangalam Om Stapakaya Chadarmasya Sarva Dharma Sarupine Avatara Varishta Rama Krishnaya Mangalam Om Sarashiva Samarambam Shankara Charya Majamam Ashmara Chara Prayantam Vande Gurum Paramparam.
So last week, we've been reading every week from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We finish the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh skanda, yes. Very beautiful. And before we jump into the next section, actually it's very nice because we're about to leave for India, so we'll be a little bit of a break. I think maybe one more talk, I'm not sure, one more Saturday? Maybe only one more Saturday. So before we jump into the next subsection in the Bhagavatam, we have a little holiday. Today is, of course, the most auspicious Dattatreya Jayanti, the Advent anniversary of Guru Dattatreya. It's recorded, not much is known historically, only a few records are there about details of his life. One of the records is, of course, his family line. We know who he was born to which parents, and we also know the date of his birth. Not the date of his birth, the lunar date of his birth, which on this Purnima. On the cusp of Chaturthi and Purnima. And this morning, many people know there was an eclipse, right, the Grahan, a lunar eclipse. And so I think in America, the full moon started yesterday and went through this morning. Normally we'd celebrate it the night, or it would be celebrated yesterday. But because of this eclipse, there's some rule that comes into play. So Dattatreya is worshipped today rather than yesterday. We're celebrating today. And Dattatreya, it fits into our Bhagavatam reading. We're jumping a few books ahead. So, but he's also mentioned the Bhagavat. He's mentioned many Puranas, many scriptures. Many texts are ascribed to him. Most famous, everybody maybe have heard, is Avadhuta Gita, the beautiful, almost the most sublime text of Advaita philosophy. Avadhuta Gita is attributed to him. Mukti Gita. There's a Dattatreya Upanishad, there's the Avadhuta Upanishad. There's many texts that he left, as well as the Kalpa Sutra, Parashuram. He also is an original speaker of this. So Guru Dattatreya, he's always attributed as Guru Dattatreya. Always he's given that title because he's Adi Guru. We say Adi Shankaracharya, Adi Guru Shankaracharya, because there's many Shankaracharyas, but Shankaracharya was the first Shankaracharya. But we say Adi Guru for Dattatreya because he's considered, really, practically speaking, the original Guru, the primordial Guru. Right? He is a founder of many lineages, the founder of most of the Advaitic lines. When Shankaracharya organized the monastic orders, he organized existing orders, existing lineages of sadhus into this Dashnami, 10-named order under 4 months for the sake of preaching. And trying to save Hinduism or the Vedic tradition from attack at that time was happening. But he didn't, those tens of thousands of sadhus, they weren't his disciples. He organized existing lineages. Many of those lineages went back to Dattatreya. Right? So one month that we chant Sadhu Shiva Samarambam Shankaracharya Majamam Ashmaracharya Prayantam Vande Gurum Param. We bow to that long lineage of masters. Beginning with Sada Shiva, in the middle with Shankaracharya, and our own guru, my own acharya, at its present state. That long lineage with our guru, Shankaracharya, and Sada Shiva. Who's Sada Shiva? And this, in that mantra, Dattatreya represents Sada Shiva. Some people chant the mantra, Dattatreya Samarambam Shankaracharya Majamam. Starting with Dattatreya, that's Sada Shiva. Very mysterious personality, right? He's mentioned, and I'll tell some stories about his birth, mentioned in Puranas, but there's references to him way before the Puranas, right? That the Puranas By the time the Puranas were recorded, his story had developed a little bit, and the iconography had developed. You see him, this beautiful form with three heads, right, carrying, surrounded by four dogs and a cow, always with a cow. He always has these certain weapons, always has a jolly, a sadhu bag, right? These are the symptoms of that. He's always dressed in yellow with padukas. The symbol of the guru padukas are his symbol, right? This has become the iconographic image of him. Very powerful image, very divine, and a traditional story. But there's references to him in much older texts that most likely the earliest mantras to him do not mention him as Trimurti avatar, as the incarnation of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, as having three heads, as wearing this cloth. The earliest texts don't, those mantras come much later. Earliest texts, he was most likely, as far as the texts say, a very ancient yogi. Who knows, 10,000 years plus, they believe. His date is there, right? One original yogi who left home, entered the forest as a sadhu, right? Leaving everything, right? We say Digambara, means he's naked. He left everything, right? And wandered into the forest, sitting with his duni. Slowly some disciples came, right? And he passed on something. What he passed on, mysterious. And their disciples passed on. So from some yogi, leaving society, living deep in the forest, living without anything, without clothes, without name, without anything. So many, actually all the lineages that we know, almost all we can think originally come from him. Really amazing. So he's like the original sadhu, you could say. There's one earlier sadhu, Nikanaga Baba Rishabha. Rishabha, who is considered the first Jain sadhu, but he's also a Vedic rishi. He also left, he's recorded as wandering into the forest naked. He's earlier date, I think, than Dattatreya, according to Purana. Very mysterious. So the Nagababas, and you see all the yogis and Nagababas, the Junakara Nagababas, they claim Dattatreya as their guru. Actually, we're in that line. We claim Dattatreya as our founder of our lineage is Dattatreya Bhagavan. The not yogis, you know, where Hatha Yoga comes from, and Prana, all the science of yoga comes from the not yogis. They also trace their lineage from Dattatreya. This Sri Vidya, this worship of the Sri Chakra, right? That was all coming from Dattatreya. Dattatreya gave it to Parashuram. It's been passed down this way. The esoteric science of Tantra, of Devi, of the worship of the Divine Mother. When Parashuram, he was very angry. You know, Parashuram is considered also an incarnation of the Lord, but he was extremely angry at the Kshatriyas. Because the Kshatriyas killed, I think, his father or something, right? And so he was so angry, he exterminated the warrior caste 21 times, right? He was a Brahmin, but he exterminated 21 times the entire Brahmin caste, right? And did offerings to his ancestors with their blood. Very gory, his ancient, very horrific personality. Still, he was still angry, still not appeased, so wandering, not knowing what else to do, he happens to go into the forest and runs into Dattatreya. Dattatreya says, "This will not hear all this. You can kill everybody forever. You can exterminate the whole world again and again. It won't appease your anger. Only worship of Parashakti, the Divine Mother, will appease your anger. It will change everything." So he initiated into the science of Devi Upasana, where we get this esoteric mantras. So I'll just give a few details. I didn't really we had this program today, so we didn't really prepare exactly a class. But I thinking about what to speak about, I want to talk what we can say about Dattatreya's teachings are very esoteric. The tantric part we can't speak; we ourselves don't understand them. They're too esoteric and complicated for us. And his Advaita from Avahuta Gita is also beyond easy description and understanding. So that we can also speak clearly, right? So we can speak the Bhagavatam in the 11th skanda. Krishna himself tells the story of Dattatreya. So I think that we could speak. That's not so complicated. Krishna himself is speaking to Uddhava and others his final message before he leaves the world. Before he leaves the world, one of the final things he talks is this story of. He says, in ancient times, my founder of my race, Krishna is which race? Which clan? Yadu, right? Yadu clan, right? Ram is Raghu clan. This is Yadu clan. So the original Yadu, Yadavas and the Yadu, like this, right? The original Yadu, he one time was wandering, and just by chance he meets Dattatreya. He meets a yogi, wandering. Actually, the Bhagavatam cleverly says, like a boy, very happy, without anything, very happy, like a young boy, although not a young boy. What does a young boy means? He was like a little, in India, little boys run around naked. So he was an adult wandering around naked. It's a code, you have to know the code. Wandering naked, but without anything. And he says, why? And he thought, this king thought, I have everything. I'm the king Yadu, right? You know, I'm Yagu, Raja Yadu. I have everything and I'm not happy. And this man's wandering. I just by chance I meet him. He has nothing and he's happy. Something's mysterious, right? Like it was in the story of was it Alexander the Great who met our founder of the Cynics, Diogenes, right? Was that him, right? Also same thing. Diogenes was not modern, but I guess which period? The European version of, not European, I guess. Greek version of Dattatreya, right? He was also living naked in the public square, and people heard that he was very wise, and we told the story to me a few days ago, get it right? Alexander went to go ask him.
Any details? Diogenes was lying in the sun. And Alexander the Great had come back from conquering so much. And he said, I'm Alexander. Diogenes, I'll give you whatever you want. And Diogenes said, I want you to get out of my sunlight. And then, supposedly, as Alexander walked away, if I had not been born Alexander, would that I had been born Diogenes.
Yeah, he was such a wise man, but he completely renounced, but also the same thing, he was the Nagababa of the Western world, right? Such clear, penetrating analysis of everything. Right, well, that's a great line. What does somebody who has nothing, see, most of it, we don't have enough, and so kings are very important to us. We want them to give us more, and we don't want them to take what we have. To attack, we want them to arrange something for us and not take away what we have, right? But if you don't have anything, and you don't want anything, and you don't need anything, what value does a king have? He can't take anything from you, and he can't give you anything. Right, so the same thing. I want you to get one boon you can do is get out of my sun. You know, very very nice. Right. So the same thing, same type of meeting. I think I thought of that when I was thinking of this meeting, that Yadu he when he saw Dattatreya, he actually goes and pranams to him, and says, "Who are you?" Right, and where did you get? You know, who? What is your lineage? Where did you learn this? Are you? You must be a great guru. I want to be your disciple. You teach me something. And he says, actually, I have. He doesn't claim to be a guru. He doesn't claim to be a saint, right? And so who is his guru, right? So basically, the question is, how did you become like this, and who is your guru? So we'll take a quick jump back to his birth. We have to understand a little bit about this unique. This unique form is given. His father is Atri Rishi, right? Atri Rishi, and his mother is Anusuriya. I always put an R in there. Anusuriya. Thank you. Yes, right. And mother was extremely pure, right? And she had tremendous. They call. Patni Vrat, right? This is completely dedicated to her husband, very chaste, right, and devoted to her husband. And so it says that Lakshmi, Saraswati, and Parvati, they decided to test her chastity, her focus on her husband, right? And so the story, there's many versions of the story. This is the most common, generalized version of his story. And so they told their husbands, you go and you ask them to feed you without cloth, right? We want her to feed you without their clothes on. So how is this possible? How can a woman Nowadays it's possible, but now I hear, but at that time, it's not possible for a woman to be naked in front of anybody but her husband. Not possible. So how is it possible? So they appear, they, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva take the form of sannyasis, right? And they knock on their door, and then the equivalent of knocking on their door, Narayana Hari, is what you say when you go for bhiksha. Bhiksham dihi, bhavati bhiksham dihi. Oh, good woman, give me alms, we're hungry, give us food, right? And so she opens the door and sees Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, but not, sees them just as Brahmin sadhus, sannyasis, right? And it goes, okay, he says, but Ma, we request that you feed us without clothes. He says, so what can she do? Because she couldn't say yes. How can she say yes, right? And be in front, naked in front of a man who's not her, or three men, what to speak of one man that's not her husband. But how could she say no? That a sannyasi comes to the door asking alms. You cannot not give alms. This is a great sin. So not knowing what to do, she said she simply remembered her husband, right, and began to feed them, right? And there's versions of the story. Some say that she said, if you appear as children, then I'll feed you, right? But the normal thing is just remembering her husband, then immediately they became like children, right? They were no longer adult sannyasi, but three little babies, right? And so the story goes that it's then no problem. In front of a child, anybody can be naked in front of a child, right? And so she suckled, she said that she fed them with her own breast milk. Right, and so they had a boon. The story continues, and then Narada Muni goes back to Vaikuntha and tells Brahma, Saraswati, Lakshmi, and Parvati, your husbands are now little children. You've lost your husband. Right, right. So they come, and anyway, long story short, they agree. They give a boon of having a child just like them, that they, just because she approached them as a mother, that as pure, the purity intention of a mother, that they'll be just like her. They'll have a child just like them. So they left the child, and became and returned to their divine abode, to their own good wives, right? And so this is a normal story, that, and therefore her baby was born. As an incarnation of the Shakti of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, shown. That's why he's shown with the three heads of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, right? And the six arms, it's the weapons. Of, she has a trishul, and the kamandalu, and the lotus, and the mala, and the chakra. All the symbols of the three of the Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, is there. I think about this story a lot because we're very fond of Dattatreya, and it's good of our lineage. I think about this. And I sometimes think that, and this is what our Guruji also shares, that he gave being because he will become the great Avadhut. That means beyond all body consciousness, right? He can walk naked in front of everybody, but nobody would notice. He's the original Nagababa, Digambara, cloud and closed in space, right? And what does it mean? Like when he went in front of a woman, you have to feed me without clothes. What does this mean? Well, first you become like a child, right? If you don't think body consciousness, a mother does not think body consciousness of a child. You have to go beyond this distinction. So to be naked in front of somebody means to be beyond body consciousness, beyond shame, beyond hatred, beyond the other great yogi we know who was beyond like this is the speaker of the Bhagavatam itself. Sukha, right? Sukha was, this is a funny story, he stayed in his mother's womb 16 years. We feel very sorry for his mother. I told this a long time when we read his story, the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, many years ago. Some of the mothers pointed out that children don't, even after 16 years, are still in their mother's womb in America also. Sometimes 21 years, still like this. But he didn't want, why? Because he didn't want to enter this world. He saw this world full of Maya, so he didn't want to be born, right? So the poor mother was suffering like anything. So she prayed to Mahavishnu. He withdrew momentarily his Maya so that he would enter the world. But the second he entered the world, what happened? He left. He was 16 years, and he just immediately walked out and just walked away, right? And his father, who's his father? Vedavyas, right? He's a great rishi, the author of the recorder of the Vedas and Puranas, the Mahabharata and the Bhagavat. He's the greatest rishi of all times, also considered an incarnation of Bhagavan, right? And so he went to follow, to chase, And when at one point, chasing after his son, his naked son is running, he runs by some ladies or girls who are bathing in a river, right, without clothes. And immediately they go and they try to cover their clothes. Oh my God, some man has come. They cover themselves. And he says, did my son come through here? And he goes, yes, one man came through here. He says, but you didn't cover yourself. He was 16 years old, completely naked, very good looking, and you didn't cover yourself. I'm an old man, a rishi, right? I'm 80 years old or whatever. I'm rishi, I'm a saint, and yet you're covered. Right? He says, but he had no body consciousness. Right? Therefore, we did not feel ashamed. You, although a holy man, you know the difference between man and woman. Right? You know what a body is. You know these things. So we, feeling that you saw a difference, we felt ashamed and covered ourselves. Right? It's similar. That boy, you know, it's like in front of children, a naked children runs by, you don't even think about it. Right? That the problem is we have plenty of naked people in our culture, but they're not beyond body consciousness. That's our problem. They're not exactly Nagabhavas, you know. So this is one story why he's shown to see three heads. And the three heads also, we say Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshwara, Guru Deva Param Brahman. The Guru is Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. The Guru is Supreme Brahman itself. When we say that, we don't say it. Turns out, I mean, I am very fond of my Guru, Swami Omananda Saraswati, but I really don't think he created the universe and will destroy it at the end of the world. That's not what's meant. The individual Guru is not Brahma, Guru, not Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. But the Guru, that real Guru principle, is beyond everything. He's Parabrahma, is beyond everything, as well as everything. Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. So we say Guru Brahma, Vishnu. It's a prayer to the original Guru, like Dattatreya. And this, he's seen when he appeared in this form, in the original story, he appeared as a baby, then he immediately showed his real form with three heads and all these weapons, and immediately the earth took the form of a cow and ran to him for protection. Right? Because in Kali Yuga, she says, people won't respect me. People will hurt, people will torture me. Right? And so she took this form of a cow. The earth always takes this form. So also people don't respect and protect the cow also. And ran to him, and he's always with him. Wherever he goes, he's not trying to keep a cow. It's not his mount. Like Shiva rides a bull. She does not ride this cow. The cow is always just with him for protection. And then the Vedas also thinking, in Kali Yuga, nobody will follow the Vedas. Nobody will respect the Vedas. We also need protection. Right? So they became dogs and also are following him. He does not keep dogs. They follow him. Right? So really we think that dogs feel they should protect the master, right? But the dog is not, but the master is a protector, not the dogs, right? It's a mentality. The Vedas are protecting religion. They're protecting God. This is not God's protecting, you know, and the Vedas themselves are chasing after the Avadhut. It's also something we are desperately trying not to stay at least at the human condition and follow a little bit of Vedic tradition. Krishna says, let the Vedas be the standard for what you should do, what you shouldn't do, right? We have a little bit of trying to follow the Vedas, but Dattatreya, as an Avadhut, he's not trying to follow the Vedas. The Vedas are following him. He's spontaneous. He's already in that universal conscious state. So the Vedas, the earth, everyone is following him. In this story, in this picture, he's always shown with a jholi, a bag, right? Another thing, his iconography is interesting, right? And this is something, sadhus, they don't carry much. What they carry, they put in their bag, right? And some carry this old-fashioned bag. We just tie four corners of a cloth together and it creates a little pouch, right? Nowadays, the babas, you know, you've seen there's these traditional jolis, very elaborately like that. But the same, it comes from that, Dattatreya's bag. He carries this joli. And in this bag, what does he take? He doesn't need anything, he doesn't have anything. But he's a beggar, he's a bhikshu. So he's asking, you give me, right? So the story in this image, what do we give me? He says, you give me all your sins. He puts in his bag. When a sadhu goes begging, you put it in his bag, and later he goes and he eats those things, right? So you say, anything you give him, no problem. You give me, I shall digest those things, right? So this is something. This is such a. There are still sadhus like this. You go to do pranams to a sadhu. They say, you give my blessing, I'll take your sins. No problem. Right. This is that bag, the sadhu's bag, miraculous bag of miracles, as they call it. So back to our story of Yadu. Yadu approached him and says, actually, I'm simply wandering, and I learn from everything. I have many gurus. He says, who's your guru? Where'd you learn to be like this? I have many gurus. Right? So think of humility. I'm not a guru. I'm not the Lord. We know he's Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. He's a supreme being himself, the greatest yogi, the first yogi. But he simply said, I'm wandering, and everywhere I go, I learn something. I've learned how to be like I am. You're asking me, how did you become like this? From everything. Right? This is a very mysterious thing about wandering life. Right? And sadhu life. He learned, by being a wandering sadhu, he was open to learn from everything. And learning from everything taught him how to be a good sadhu. Right? So this is in the 11th skanda. It's told, if you should read, it's actually, where is it? It's skanda 11, chapter 7 starts right here. 7, 8, 9, I think. It's over three chapters. This conversation goes. I'm just going to summarize a little bit. But it's something really beautiful. You should read it if you have Bhagavatam at home. So he said, I'll give you you want to know the names of my guru. I'll give you the names of my guru. Earth, water, fire, sky, moon, sun, pigeon, python, ocean, moth, black bee, bees, elephants, deer, fish, dancing girl, Pingala the prostitute. That's a good one. A raven's child, a maiden, a serpent, an arrow maker, a spider, and a beetle. These are my go. He recited his lineage. Who he learned how to be from, like that. We won't go through all of them because it's too late. But a few of them, I think, were kind of interesting. Right. So what does that mean? Everywhere he went, everything he saw, he watched and saw it. And like, what can I learn from this? Right. So just noticing. And if you're open, everything becomes a guru. If you want to learn and you observe, everything can become your guru. He looks at the earth. And what's the earth? What is the quality of the earth? Such a patient, steady thing. We step on it. People walk. We walk without shoes on. Like, first thing in the morning, there's some prayers. I don't know, maybe some people know it, where you touch the earth and you ask forgiveness for stepping. Right? Before, because you say, oh, the Divine Mother Goddess Earth, oceans are your fluids, and the trees are your hairs, and the mountains are your skin. You know, it's a beautiful mantra. I used to chant it. I don't remember it anymore. You remember it? Our Guruji chants it. And he says, please forgive me for stepping on you before you take your first step in the morning. Right? How much respect the earth respects. The earth is our divine mother, right? But people spit on the earth. We step on it with shoes. Now we do. Now you see what we do. We're mining, we pollute it, and all kinds of horrible things. But the earth is steady and patient. Didas, it's a very serious and patient and steady, and I guess so. I learned that from the earth. Just seeing how the earth is, what anybody does to me, I simply tolerate. Right? I'm steady, like the earth. Right? He says, what about water? Same, right? Water is always, no matter what anybody does to it, it always just remains. You throw pollutants into it. If you pollute water, you actually don't pollute water, right? You can always filter the pollutants out. Something is, it's never really mixed. There's always the Shastra says actually water is always pure. Things are in it, right? There's, oh, the Ganga's dirty. Actually, the Ganga's pure. There's many dirty things in the Ganga, but the Ganga's pure, right? So like that, he says, from water I also learned this quality, right? From air, I learned that to be non-attached from anything. Air is everywhere, right? Everything's inside air. Everything's moving. Nothing can limit the sky. Nothing can limit air, right? Not only that, air, like if something is dirty, what do? You open the windows, let some fresh air in. Air has a quality of purifying everything. So he learned these qualities from the air, right? From fire, he said, I learned. Because fire, one word for fire is tapas, tapasya, from heat, right? To generate heat. Fire, anything you throw into the fire, if you throw ghee into the fire, the purest substance on earth is ghee, purified ghee. You throw it into the fire, it burns, right? You can throw lard, the most impure substance, into the fire, it burns. Right? Anything clean, anything unclean, it simply consumes that. This is why he can take anything in his bag. Sin, virtue, no problem. Anything like fire, anything that happens to me, however people respond to me, I can burn that through my austerity. I learned from fire. From the sky, I learned that like the sky, that my real self is all-pervading. Right, all-pervading and without limits. This is the nature of the sky. There's a beautiful mantra we've been studying from the Nirvana Upanishad, my favorite Upanishad, the Sannyasa Upanishad, meant for sannyasis. It says, Gagana Siddhanta. Right, Siddhanta means your teachings, conclusions, what's Siddhanta? Principle. Siddhanta, like, you know, Advaita Siddhanta, the teachings of Advaita. Sometimes like the Siddhanta of mainstream Christianity is Jesus died for our sins, believe in him. It's like the core conclusion, the full conclusion, believe the Siddhanta, right? He says, but the Abhirhut Siddhanta is his Gagana, like the sky. It means unlimited. There's no way to put a limit on it, right? There's not one, you can't define it. I'm like that. My nature is like the sky. My teachings are like the sky. What I believe is like the sky, without limits like this. So he says, so imagine if you're wandering in nature, you're learning from the earth and the sky. At nighttime you look up, you see the moon. You see the sun, you see the moon. That also shows with the moon, today is full moon, right? Tomorrow it could be Pratima, right? The first day of Krishna Paksha, the moon will be slightly less bright, and the next day a little bit less bright. So all these digits of the moon, day by day, night by night, getting darker and darker until being the new moon, dark moon, and then light until full moon. All the time is changing. Like, oh, every day we're under a different moon. Every day the moon is different, but actually the moon's not different. The moon is exact. Nothing has happened to the moon. All these digits that we see are simply its appearance. It's not true. Nothing's happened to them. On Purnima and New Moon, they're exactly the same. The moon is simply the moon. Right? So he says, from the moon I learned this. That this is the nature of the self. Although all these things change, seem to change, they're only seeming. Nothing's changed. I'm always the same. Everything's always the same. God's always the same. Right? Only it seems to be changing. The digits of the moon don't belong to the moon. That's what he learned, right? All the changes don't belong to the self, right? They seem to. We attribute it to the moon. That's not true. So, nothing changed. I learned from the moon that the self is unchanging. And I learned from the sun. What do you learn from the sun? This is a classic Vedantic example. That the sun is only one, although appears in many places. You have many reflections of the sun. And so many examples given, so many pans of water, you'll see so many suns. There's only one sun. So I learned from the sun, just by using that example, by studying the nature of sun and reflection, I learned that there's only one self appearing, seeming to appear in so many forms. From the moon, sun. So I learned from pigeons also. But it means just looking at nature. He saw a beautiful set of pigeons, doves, I guess you would say. They're like doves, actually, the word. And doves have a beauty. They're very neat. We're very fond of doves in our neighborhood. They mate for life. They're very family oriented, right? And you see this. They had a nest. They had a family. They gave the female dove gave birth. But then, when they were away collecting food, some hunter caught the baby in the net, and the mother is so scared. Right, and so much as so much anxiety, the child went to try to save the child, and was also caught in the net. And it says, and he's watching. And the father bird was also thinking, just see, my child's been taken. All the things, my nest is gone. My child's been taken. The mother has been taken. What else? Where should I live for anything? Better I die with them. And he also goes and gets caught. Right. So the Abhirhuta scene, Dattatreya scene, is I learned how very easily by attachment and by infatuation we can become so bewildered I mean, we can understand the sentiment, right? It's not the wrong sentiment as a mother to try to protect his child, but how out of it he took the principle out of it, even animals out of attachment to get caught like this. He doesn't want to, I have to be very careful not to get caught like that. Who else? He learned from a python. He says, how much time we spend running around hunting for food? He said, the snake simply sits there and food will come. Just wait, and eventually some little thing or when it came by and the animal, you don't have to go hunting. Snakes don't have to hunt, they have to wait. Right? So he says that the sadhu, or not, he's a sadhu, he's giving teaching, but he's saying how I learned this, but this is being told to King Yadu, right? So it's for everybody, not just for sadhu. That so much effort, if we just be patient, everything will come to us by our prabhu karma. The karma will bring it to us. Just wait. I learned from the ocean. Very important. This is also a verse in Gita. And like the ocean, so many streams and rivers flow into the ocean. But the ocean remains unmoved, unchanged, right? Which is interesting because some of these rivers may be dirty things, maybe flowing into these rivers. It pours into the ocean remains. Ocean remains the ocean. And sometimes we think, and the Gita uses the same example, just like about sense control, right? Because we try our best to be completely self-controlled and not agitated by the senses, right? But that's almost not only almost impossible, that's actually impossible. We cannot stop the senses from doing what they do, right? We cannot stop the world from being what the world is, right? But the ocean remains unmoved. All these things come in, but it remains unagitated, bigger, deeper, right? So this is that by that, whatever good, whatever bad comes, I'm not identified with it. I think I can absorb it all, just like the ocean. It's 24 gurus. Well, I like this one. I think about this one a lot. This, I learned from, if you have the sadhus, they keep a fire with them, like a duni. Wherever they go, they light a fire and they cook their whatever food like that. They sit there and very mystical practice, right? But if you see, sometimes you even light a candle, some moth will come immediately dive into the candle, right? So seeing that, I learned many things from these moths, right? What is it? Seeing the object of their desire, this beautiful light, right? I simply, out of desire for that object, everything disappears. As they get close, I mean, it's like if the moth were to think, oh, that's a flame, there's different types of, it's like you lose all discriminative power, just simply attracted to the object of desire. So much so where and the very object of desire, as you get closer, it gets hotter and hotter. It's killing you. But you cannot stop. A moth can't help itself. When I see a moth coming around, within a few seconds, it's going to be in the fire. There's nothing you can do to stop it. Right, you've probably seen it around your kitchen light or something. They come, they won't. Eventually, they'll keep banging the light until they die. They cannot help it, because it's their object of desire. It's a noble desire. Light, it's a nice thing. Heat, light, warmth, all the things we like, right? But he says that from that, I learned how an object, a pleasant object, can become so absorbing that we forget everything and allow it to consume us. I learned that from moths. What else? I learned from bees, right? What do you learn from bees? It's called madhukari. I learned that bees go from many places, a little here, a little here, a little here, a little here. They collect food from many places, right? No need to, and bees also, they land on a flower and they just sip. They take a little bit and they go to the next flower. And that's a beautiful thing, actually. I think bees are one thing, but also like you ever see hummingbirds, how beautiful. They come, they go from, they barely touch a flower. They go from flower to flower. They take only what they need. It's from many places. Right, sadhu is supposed to beg from seven houses, not one house. Right? We just go to Veggie Grill or something. It's our we beg from one house. It's a little different. But anyway. Kali Yuga anyway. This is why Dharma and the Vedas are taking shelter of Abhidhi. You should go to seven restaurants before eating. Okay. But a bee or a sadhu is supposed to go just from seven houses, I mean to collect a tiny bit, and like a bee, it not only doesn't hurt the flower, it pollinates the flower. It actually does good to the flower. It barely touches it, takes only what it needs, and leaves it better, and leaves it, benefits it. right? What do? We slam the flower, stick it in our mouth, move on, right? Can barely have, like a bee is an incredibly brilliant environmental machine, you know? It only does, it, so sadhu is supposed to be like this. You take a little bit from here and there, so nothing is hurt. And every year you give blessings, you give teachings, only benefit will come everywhere, like a bee. Called madhukari, this is traditional sadhu behavior, one from collecting like a bee. I learned from elephants. Elephants have a I'm not expert at elephant behavior, but they say that elephants, by touch, they can't, like, when a she elephant touches an elephant just a little bit, that's net, it awakens lust in the elephant by touch, right? So, and becomes, and can be trapped. The verse is actually not clear in the Sanskrit, but it says, from the elephants I learned that not to be overly attached to pleasant feelings, because a pleasant feeling can trap me, right? Oh, I learned from a deer. Deer is how, when you go deer hunters in ancient time, I think they still do it, like in duck hunters, what do? You do a duck call, and you get ducks to come. Why? You call them, they think, oh, there's a friendly duck, right? And then you shoot them. That's what they do, right? Same with deer. They do calls, mating calls. Right? People, hunters know how to do a mating call for a deer. And a deer gets excited and runs up, gets agitated, hearing that sound, an auspicious sound, right? An attractive sound, and jumps out and gets shot, right? So he says, from this I learned to be very careful about what I hear. Actually means what type of music I listen to, what type of words, things that excite my lust and desire. And like a deer, you jump up without thinking, just attracted to something, right? So many commentaries have been written. This is one of the verses people like to write commentaries on, right? Because it seems that we should be very careful what music we listen to, what TV we watch, not that crude things are awakened, right? We should learn from this. From a fish, we've caught the moth, we've caught deer, we caught elephants. How do you catch fish? To bait, right? To taste, right? So not to be overly so attached, be able to think, that looks good, and that looks, it smells good and tastes good, right? But is it good, right? So it's like if we fish, just seeing a worm, me, oh, wow, this is, how often do you find a worm in the middle of a lake? This is awesome. Like the best thing that's ever happened, you know? So you immediately go, you know, it's like now thinking, worms don't live in lakes. I should think about this, you know? So any of these senses, watching how nature, by being bewildered by the senses, they lose their intelligence, right? And jump, right? It's interesting, a sub-note on this, because seeing you, I'm thinking of Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi. And we read something, I think you read it to me once, where somebody was saying, isn't it wonderful that all these people are coming to feed the sadhus? He says, oh, they're not coming to feed the sadhus, they're coming to eat the sadhus. Right? He says that when you put a worm on a hook and you throw it, are you trying to feed the fish? Are you trying to eat the fish? Right? He says, they're coming to feed me not because they want to benefit me, they want something from me. That was interesting. He could see what is food and what is bait, you know, so it's, you need to know what food is good for us. Fish. Oh, pingala. This one I think I thought about a lot today, thinking about Dattatreya. I learned something. Dattatreya tells a long story, and actually there's a whole, like a 40 verse hymn in where it kind of breaks. Most of, in the Bhagavatam, most of these are like 2 or 3 verses. This one's like 40, 50 verses, this story. He says, I saw that there was a courtesan, prostitute, right? And she decorated herself very attractively, right? And she would stand just outside her door, right? Waiting to attract a customer, right? Because she needed money, she needed affection, she needed to support herself, right? It's not an auspicious livelihood, but that was her livelihood. And the whole day she was watching, and she'd go inside a little bit and she'd been to eat something. She'd go outside because she didn't want to miss anybody. Maybe some guy would walk by and she'd get a customer. Her whole life, and he was watching. He says, day after day, this is her life, right? Trying to get somebody to be attracted to her and so she can get business. And then one night she said, the whole night she couldn't sleep. She couldn't. The daytime she didn't eat. At nighttime she couldn't sleep. Always thinking how to get a customer. And then one night, and the whole night not sleeping, never properly sleeping. If she gets a customer, she doesn't sleep well. If she doesn't get a customer, she doesn't sleep well. Right? And he watched, he says, watching her movements, she heard her one night singing a song. That hymn is very beautiful. A song of great renunciation. Right? She heard this prostitute singing that, alas, look, it's like, I have a lover that's always with me. Right, and he said, "This Achyuta, this Vishnu, is always in my heart, always there." Right, but trying to look for external lovers, I can't even get a good night's sleep. I can't even get a proper meal when everything I have is right here. But I move here, I stand here, I dress. Everything I do is trying to attract somebody. And who will I get? What type of lover will I get? Maybe I'll get a lover. What type of lover will I get? It won't be satisfying. It won't be a right cause. Right. So she says, thinking of, it's a long hymn, I'm not going to say the whole thing, but thinking of this, she says she got cream renunciation, and she says, from now on, I'm only interested in God. No more, not even earthly love, not even a legitimate lover, what to speak of a legitimate customer. I only want God. And from that night on, she got good sleep. Right, so he says, I learned great renunciation, how to get peaceful mind. Not to seek for happiness from something that can't possibly give proper happiness. She wasn't looking for like a good husband and a family. It's all temporary, you know. So it says, by renouncing that, I can actually rest. I can get good sleep, not be agitated. The dancing girl Pingala, she says, she's also my guru. But just think of, like, if you have this attitude, everything that the guru is everywhere, every situation, nature itself will teach you. Right, in the Gita it says, Krishna says, when Arjuna says, where did you learn this? And where? And he says, oh, I first taught this to the sun. Right, and the sun taught it to his, and it passed down to the sun god, and then ancient kings learned it this way. I sometimes think maybe there was a deity of the sun who had a disciple who came down, maybe like this. Or the ancient people looked up and saw nature, and they learned the whole Gita from the sun, the moon, just watching the wind. Right, he says, but in this age it's been lost, so now I have to speak it to you because you're my friend and disciple and devotee. Right, so the yogis, yes, you can, the teachings are everywhere. Right, we're not living that life, so we have a guru, we have books, we have, you know, again and again we drum it, we still don't get it, but just by nature he learned all these things. This is one Usha quotes a lot. This is, I learned from a crow something very important. There's a crow who grabbed a piece of meat, right, and was flying. And seeing that piece of meat in the crow's mouth, you can imagine what happens. All the other crows go to attack it. And he flies up, and the crows are, you know, I mean, we look outside and watch the behavior of crows. Watch behavior of the crows and ravens like this, and they're fighting. He couldn't get any. He went down here, and everywhere he landed, he couldn't land. He couldn't eat a simple piece of meat that he happened to find. Right, until he dropped it. As soon as he dropped it, all the crows went to that, and the crow just landed on a tree like, ah. Right, so he says, from that crow I learned, by holding on to attached objects, all my anxieties come. If I let it go, then I'm happy. Right, I learned, he says, that crow is my guru. Sri Guru Vyo Nama. Let's see. From a child, I learned how to. A child sits in its mother's lap, completely satisfied. Right? What else? How much? Of course, we should all learn much from children, right? Unless you be like little children, you shall enter the kingdom of God, Jesus said. Right? So from them, I learned just how to just completely surrender and just be natural in the mother's lap. I learned from children. Well, this, I just did it perfect. So I learned from a maiden, the maiden, from a husking. The story, he tells a longer story. He says that when you go to arrange a marriage, right, you have to investigate it. And when you have arranged marriages, you have to, the parents have to snoop out the family. You have to find out what's really, because the family says one thing, but maybe something different, right? You have to know. So the parents of the boy who was interested in a particular girl went to his house. Right, and for lunch, this is a common thing. There's usually some meeting like this, and where the parents get to talk. But really, it's really to see how they live, how much money they have, how cultured they are, like this, right? But the very poor family, right? So they had no cook, no servant. So the girl, the prospective bride, she was husking paddy and making chapatis for the host. And like, I just did this, what happened? She did the sound, right? And she had cheap, the poor girl, what type of bangles were you? Just glass bangles, nothing fancy. So by doing this, even though they're in the other room talking business, right? And dowries and like this, right? She's thinking, oh my goodness, they're going to, by hearing this, they'll know that we're from a poor family. Just hearing this, they'll know I'm from a poor family. So what she does, I'll do it right now. She takes one off, keeps going, no problem. Right. So now I'm clean. I'm clear. Right. We're silent. And so noticing this is just the way life is. You know, this is family life. You know, we've seen like this. But Dattatreya said, I saw from this that as soon as there's two, three people, there's always noise and fighting. It's interesting what lesson he got from this. It's like it says when you only have one or no bangles, it's quiet and peaceful. Right, you don't reveal anything, you don't fight, you don't like this, right? I learned that. Let's see, three more. Oh, I learned from a serpent. Another lesson he learned from this, from a snake. He says, snakes, how much time we spend in our life to build, to buy, to build a house. Right, so it says, as a sannyasi, he realized a snake simply moves around and lives in what's available. He lives in whatever, the house that a snake lives in, he didn't build. Snakes can't dig. And they live in holes and crevices, right? They live in holes that other people have built, right? So sadhus also live, they go anywhere and they live anywhere. Other people's homes, other, you know, he said, I learned from that not to waste my time. To put all this energy, all this money, all this anxiety to build something that's not good, that I won't be able to live in anyways, ultimately. I learned from an arrow maker how to concentrate. Look at an artist, I'm making simple, it's a simple thing of making arrows, right? But making anything, you watch people work. They have more workers have more concentration than yogis. How they're completely one-pointed, you know, I learned from that. Somewhere there I skipped one, but I learned from, because there's one about the bees, I learned from the bee maker, the beekeeper, something. I remember this, but I think I skipped it. But what is it, a bee collects so much honey, from so how much work a bee, you look at, if you have beehives nearby, so much they work, right? And they collect it all. To make a big hive. And what happens? Somebody comes and smokes them out, takes all the honey and the thing and takes it away. Right? He says, and then the bees suffer. And they immediately go and start collecting again. So while I'm collecting like a bee, I also learn from the beekeeper, right? Not to collect, not to hold. Not to hold so much. Because if you hold it, somebody will come and take it and you'll suffer. Use what he says, take and use that only. I learned from spiders. A spider, what is it? It pours from its own being. It creates a beautiful web and then lives inside that web. Gets caught in it. He lives, he creates a little world and lives inside that world, satisfied in that world. Right? He says, so we also do like we create our own little world, we live inside that world and think this is our world. Right? Like a little spider, little kingdom of a spider. And what's the spider web for? It's only to catch something to eat it. Right? We live in our little world of that comes, and this world we live in, we created. Like what we are seeing, this is all our world. We created this world. We don't know what the real world is. This is our projection. Why do we project it? For food. Right? We project it. The world eats. We call it the world. Yes, it's only for. It's very good. This is called the World Wide Web. Mention Bhagavat. Just see. And the final one he says. And this is a ancient world's understanding of how beetles come. I mean, it's maybe not scientific, but this is an observation. So the beetle catches a beetle catches a worm, and uh, 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 and the worm in the presence of a beetle, hearing the sound of a beetle, hearing a sound of a moth and like that, is scared and always thinking of that, right? And so thinking, he says, what happens is he becomes a moth or becomes a beetle, right? So this is a saying. There's a saying in some Upanishads also that thinking all the time about a butterfly, a worm becomes a butterfly, right? That it's constantly thinking. So what you think about, that you become. That is learning, watching that. Therefore, I'm be careful. I have to be very careful what I think about. Not to think worldly thoughts. Only think of God. If I think of God, then I become. I'll attain that state. The verse says, the king was highly impressed by listening to these enlightening words of Lord Dattatreya. Right. And that king Yadu, it says that he also, hearing this, he also renounced the world and went into the forest. Give it his best shot. To follow in Dattatreya's line. Right. So it's interesting, but this is probably the most approachable section of teachings of Dattatreya. Right. But I want to read one verse. Avadhuta Gita. We love Avadhuta Gita. Some are very dedicated to it, Avadhuta Gita. He has beautiful, I don't know if you noticed, he has beautiful verses from Avadhuta Gita on his arms today, yesterday. Tattooed, very lovely. Avadhuta Gita is really a sublime text. But it summarizes... There's many verses that are like, I have favorite verses. Everybody has favorite verses of Avadhuta Gita, but it's always good to see how it starts, right? And most texts start with a pranam mantra, some salutation to Ganesha or to the Guru. Even Bhaja Govindam starts, you know, it's like we salute Govinda, Shankaracharya starts, so many, or Govindacharya. So how does Avadhuta Gita start? It starts direct. Its prayer is not, oh Lord, give me your blessings. It starts with the fact that we're thinking of this is the Lord's blessings. It starts with that. Not we have to pray for blessings. The fact that we're praying, the fact that we're interested in God means you have God's blessings. You don't need to ask God's blessings. You cannot want God without God's blessings. So you don't have to, oh God, give us your blessings. That's how all hymns start this way. Avadhuta Gita starts exact opposite. The fact that we want God means we have God's blessings. Right? It says, Ishwara Anugraha, right? It's the Lord's, it's only, actually, Ishwar Anugraha Eva, it's only the Lord's grace. The grace, the Anugraha of Bhagavan, of Ishwara, the control, Supreme Lord. Advaita, Pumsam, that a person, we're all people, trying to be people, we're all people, has Advaita Vasana. Advaita Vasana, Advaita is non-dual, non-duality. And vasana means mental wave. Here it's usually interpreted as a desire. Has a desire for non-dual experience. Or a desire for God. Sometimes just translated, Advaita vasana means a desire. It's by the grace of God that one wants God. That thought of God, the vasana, or the vritti of God, could never come without God's grace. Right? It's a beautiful way of starting a hymn, right, or a text. Right? It's only by the grace, it's only, like he was Eva, only with grace of God, that a human being, a person, can even think of God, can think of the divine, Advaita Vasana. Mahabhaya Pari, my eyes. Paritrayatat Pranapitayate. What does this desire, it's by the grace of God we get this desire, and what does this desire do? Mahabhaya Paritranat. That desire helps us cross over the world of fear, right? The great fear, Mahabhaya, right? And yeah, desire for undoubtedly arises and saves them from the great fear. What's that great fear, right? We just finished these beautiful sections of Prahlad Maharaj teachings, and he's looking. Imagine Prahlad Maharaj looking at Narasimha, awesome. Right, all the gods are frightened. Nobody can approach him. Right, Hiranyakashipu has been killed. The gods, even Lakshmi, can't approach him. This fearful form, covered in blood and entrails, this Narasimha form. Right, and Prahlad says, "I'm not scared of you." Right, I'm not. Why should anybody be scared? What am I scared? I am scared of forgetting you, because forgetting you puts me into this world of samsara. Right. So he says, but I see you. Right. So there's no need. So what's the fear? I have a fear, but I'm seeing you. So there's no fear. Right. So this is also a way of thinking of this verse. It's by the grace. This is his first official teaching we get. It's only by the grace of God that we can even think and want the experience of God. And that very desire, avritta vritti or advaita vasana, helps a human being overcome the great fear. This fear, and the greatest fear is material. You can think, oh, it's birth and death, it's suffering, it's all. But actually, all that means forgetting you. Right? Sri Ramakrishna prayed to the Divine Mother, oh, Mother, don't let me forget you. That's his prayer, right? Do not delude me by thy world bewitching Maya, right? Because he's if we remember you, that's it. Actually, that's the ultimate prayer of Sri Ramakrishna. Oh Mother, don't let me forget you. Let me remember you. Don't let me forget you. So through the grace of God alone, the desire for non-duality arises in a wise person to save them from great fear. Anyway, a little disjointed, but I wanted to a little bit meditation on Guru Dattatreya on this holy day. One point, like here he's shown dressed, right? No texts show him dressed, or describe him as dressed. He's definitely an Avadhuta Nagababa. And this mantra we chanted, Digambara, Digambara. Digambara is translated as naked, but that doesn't mean naked. It's sometimes translated as sky clad, right? The Jains use this. You have Svetambara and Digambara, those who dress in white clothes and those who dress in no clothes, the two are, right? But it doesn't mean that also. Dig means directions, right? The Digpalas, right? The directional deity. Digambara, one of the names for Ma also, she has this word in her Dhyan mantra. Closed, she's closed in the directions, not in space. It's a beautiful thing. What are the directions? And all the direction means, clothes is covered, right? What's her cover? Her cover is the directions themselves. Means she's infinite, right? And so we've had one Nagababa. I asked a question about this: why most of the pictures of all the mantras describing Dattatreya always have him without clothes, right? But all the pictures have him with clothes, right? So I asked one famous Nagababa this question, you know, it's like, why is that? He says, okay, yeah, it's true, usually you see, but he says, but Digambara does not mean naked man, right? It means unfettered mind, right? He says, it's very important that that's really what it means, and the reason the yogis are practice like that is also to overcome the fetters of the mind, right? He said, but whether he wore clothes, whether he that doesn't matter. He's Nabudhut. It's not his uniform. Like we're wearing Garawares, this is our uniform. We're in like that. It's not like that for him. He has unfettered, infinite consciousness without any, no beyond duality. Advaita Vasana. He's beyond duality. Digambara. Brahma Vishnu Sara Shiva. Jai Guru Datta Digambara. Trimurti Avatar. Dattatreya Bhagavan Ki Jai. Thank you for your kind attention. There's lots of prasad today. Mm-hmm. We didn't beg from seven homes, but seven people brought. So we're a mixture between that python who just stays in one place and a bee that eats from many places. It works out really good.